Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, the main event for election 2020, Trump, Biden, two political heavyweights slugging it out with the power of the voters, both hoping for a knockout punch that will send one of them to the White House for the next 4 years. Tonight, we share analysis and any breaking news as it happens. We begin with Howard University political science professor Dr. Michael Fauntroy and Mary Curtis, columnist for The Roll Call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Fauntroy, Mary Curtis, thank you both for joining the conversation.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Let me first start with the latest news. The ruby red state of Indiana called for President Trump. Of course, that is the home state of Vice President Mike Pence. Dr. Fauntroy, I'll start with you. Any surprise there for you?
No. Indiana, Kentucky, you know, there are a number of states that are pretty much already decided, be it for Biden or for Trump. The one thing I would take note of in Indiana and in Kentucky, and I haven't had a chance to really get deep into the numbers, is the extent to which President Trump is overperforming or underperforming his 2016 numbers. And I say that because Kentucky and Indiana border Ohio, and states tend to vote in regions and in sort of clusters. So if he's underperforming in those two states, it may carry over into a much more competitive state like Ohio, and then you could be on to something.
You know, Mary, USA Today is calling Kentucky for the president. We are still very, very early in the election results business tonight. And there are so many moving parts, particularly as it relates to, for example, this federal judge who is talking about the sweep of some 12 to 15 U.S. postal regions, some 300,000 votes. What does the other stuff say to you?
Yeah, that was very interesting. And then you see the Postal Service with some backing, I think, from the Justice Department saying, we really can't do that. And I'm thinking, well, I didn't know you could really defy a federal order. But there have been so many complaints that the mails have slowed down and that suspicions it was put that this was put into place, Louis DeJoy, who's the new postmaster, to slow down these absentee and mail-in ballots. And we do see that the president has been trying to throw cold water on the legitimacy of mail-in ballots anyway. And I think one thing that does stand out here is that you do see, and primarily from Republicans, this effort to talk about the legitimacy of mail-in ballots, to have so many court cases trying to see who votes, limiting who votes, how they vote. You know, you saw in Texas the suit over people doing the drive-by voting, and also when and how they are counted, which votes are counted. And as you said, I'm from Roll Call. I'm out of Washington, and I also have a podcast for them, Equal Time, but I'm also based in North Carolina. And we see here that they had lawsuits on how long that they could be counted, the ballots, once they came in. And in North Carolina, they can be counted until November 12th if they have the postmark. And so the one thing I think that you've heard people say, people should be patient, because in so many of these states, we will not know what the final count is, even though the president is saying we need to know by tonight. And so that's, you know, where it's up in the air, where we really won't know. Now, we can, as the professor said, get some signals from some of these early states that are coming in. Florida should have its counted pretty well because they can start counting the mail-in ballots early, as North Carolina can as well. And if we can see the trend line, how is Trump doing in some of these areas where he did so well? Is he pushing those numbers up? That we will be able to get some signals, but we won't know for sure.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are analyzing election 2020 as the results come in. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call quickly. Walter, calling from Northeast D.C., what's on your mind?
Good evening, everybody.
Real quick, Walter, got a lot of folks on the line, but how you doing?
COVID.
Hmm.
That's the only way, and I voted for Biden, but it seems like Trump might pull this off.
Hmm. Okay, thank you so much for that. So what do you think about that, Dr. Fontroy? Years ago, it was Florida. Walter says COVID. Is this a battle between the believers and the non-believers, the fake news and the mainstream media people?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It's pretty early. What I will say is I just saw some reporting on some exit polls, and I was surprised that coronavirus was not as high up on either list of issues, whether they were President Trump supporters or Vice President Biden supporters. There is, however, a really big difference. Only 3% of President Trump supporters said that coronavirus was something that they were deeply focused on, while for Vice President Biden, the number was in the low 20s. Much more concern about the economy on both sides. So I think it's you know, look, it's 7:20 p.m., so we still have a little time. But I do think that paying attention to Florida, Georgia, and North Carolina are really going to tell us the whole story.
Well, to that point, Mary, right now we are looking at Joe Biden with an early lead in Florida, but 10 minutes ago, he was running behind in Florida. Obviously, it doesn't get any more fluid than this.
Oh, no. And also because the president really is counting on those same-day voters, because they've said that you might see where they're counting the mail-in and absentee, that Biden will look like he has a lead. I think in 2016, in some of these states, you saw Hillary Clinton have a lead then, but then the election day votes came in, and you saw that Trump caught up because more Republicans vote same day. And as far as the COVID, it is interesting that in so many of these states, particularly some in the Midwest, the rates, I mean, Wisconsin, the rates are going up incredibly for hospitalizations and so forth for COVID. We will see, you know, as the Republicans and Trump have tried to place that as the economy, that Democrats want to shut down the economy, and Biden has said, no, I just want to shut down the virus, and we'll see what voters think about that. And it is interesting how science and the wearing of masks and all of these things, it really has become a political issue as opposed to a scientific one. And I covered some of the rallies. I was at a Dr. Jill Biden rally, which was everyone was in cars, and people had on masks, and you had your temperature checks. Whereas at the Trump rallies, they have these very big crowds. I did not go to one he had recently nearby, but there were 15,000, 20,000 people, very little social distancing, very little wearing of masks. So that really has become a political signifier in a way you would think wouldn't happen.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about election 2020. We are following the results and any of the other issues that may come up during the course of the night. Just a reminder as well that our coverage will continue even after the Daily Drum. We will be cutting in to the quiet storm once an hour. Throughout the evening, so just want to keep you updated on that, keeping you abreast of the very latest. Dr. Fontroy, one of the things that I find, you know, truly fascinating is that I believe it was, you know, after Bush v. Gore, I never thought that we would see the kind of legal battles that portend for this particular election. Everybody's talking about the lawyers, and it seems to me, in one sense or another, at least on the Republican side, more than they were talking about the voters. Your thoughts about the legal battles that may loom for us here?
Or not only talking about the voters, but also talking about the issues. At some level, this has been a particularly issue-free election on the part of the Republicans. And you're right, I think there's been an over-focus or a significant focus on legalities. And I just think, you know, you can always tell how important something is by the extent to which people go to keep you from having it. And all of these legal threats and legal maneuverings around which votes can be counted and which ones can't are intended to shape the universe about with regard to potential Trump victory. And in the end, it may not come to very much if there's a significant difference if, for example, Biden wins Florida and he gets lucky and wins Georgia. I'm not sure that that won't portend a bit of a landslide. And then at that point, going into courts to try to overturn it really isn't going to work.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, Adaraki. Calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have two things I would like to say real quickly. One, I would like to reiterate what someone has said as far as Trump and racism. And I just want to make this perfectly clear, that Trump did not introduce us to racism. What he did was make it comfortable for people to now come out and call us.
Okay.
And start showing a true color.
And the other point you wanted to mention?
And another thing I really don't understand is that how can everybody who read the Bible and talk about God believe in segregation, believe that it's okay to enslave the people? I don't get it.
Okay. Adaraki, thank you so much. Any churchgoers in my pundit group today?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because actually I'm Catholic, and you see there's a split mainly between white Catholics and Catholics of color, brown and black Catholics, on how they feel about the president. And you actually see the Pope saying that, and you see the nuns on the bus who were very liberal and they were for health care, and some of the bishops are more conservative. And the Pope has said, you know, there are more issues than abortion. There are other social issues about how the poor are treated, how immigrants are treated, racial justice. And it's interesting that he puts it out in that way, that for some folks, you know, I'm down here in the land of Franklin Graham, for them it's abortion, same-sex marriage, and these kinds of issues. And for others, people of faith, and there are many people of faith for Biden as well, and I have been in on conversations of Catholics for Biden and all of these, listening to these press conferences, and they are saying there are so many other issues of how we treat our fellow man. And as the caller said, President Trump didn't invent this. You know, after 8 years of a black president, there are many people who felt that Trump was the antidote to that. And you have seen now people in the streets of Charlottesville. You've seen the president give comfort to the young man who shot two protesters in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You've seen him call Senator Kamala Harris, disrespect her name, and I wrote a column about that, and say that, call her a monster. And these are things that are bold and bald, and he's just putting it out there in ways. And then he's talking about, you know, for the suburban housewives that, and I'm a suburban housewife and mother.
Well, let me
going to protect you from black people, and Cory Booker's going to come, and it's like absurd, you know.
Well, I want you to drill down a little bit on that point, but we've got to let Dr. Fontroy go, and I wanted to give him a final word real quick, Dr. Fontroy, about tonight.
Yeah, just overall, I'm optimistic that there's going to be overwhelming turnout, which for somebody who cares about democracy, that's a really big deal. I'm asking everybody to be patient because these votes are not going to be counted as quickly as they ordinarily have been, partly because of the volume of votes, but also because of the rules that exist in some of these states. And stay vigilant, pay attention, let's hope that we actually get to that beloved country that Martin Luther King talked about so frequently during his great life.
Dr. Michael Fontroy, Howard University political science professor, thank you so much. I want to go.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to go back to that, Mary. You said you're a suburban housewife. You're working, so you know you may be suburban. You might even be a wife, but you know, housewife. You're working. You're bringing home the bacon and frying it up in a pan. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's what the way he frames it. It's like a Leave It to Beaver, you know, kind of thing. And most suburban women are working. I live in a suburban in Charlotte that black people could not. There were restricted covenants in the deed saying you could not sell or rent to anyone not of the Caucasian race. Mm. But it's no more. And now they're much, you know, more, my neighbors are of all races and creeds, and people, as you say, work. And so his appeals to fear, which is one of his last appeals, I'm not sure how much that's going to work. But you never know. Many people were shocked in 2016, but they are saying many of the people that he tried to appeal with this aren't buying it now.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you also your thoughts in this last minute or so before the break. You're, as they say, you're down south, and the big South Carolina Senate race. I'm really fascinated as to what may happen from your vantage point. How is that looking?
Well, Jamie Harrison has run an incredible race, and his ads are terrific. Viola Davis does the commentary on one, the narration. Lindsey Graham, as Jamie Harrison points out, has been so busy in Washington, he hasn't had a town hall in years, and he doesn't really do much for the people of South Carolina. But it is a very red state, so he would have to really pull a lot of Republicans to vote for him. I think it will be close. I'm not in the prediction business. But Lindsey Graham in the debates has been totally outclassed by Harrison. And Graham's ads really basically consist of having Jamie Harrison with Nancy Pelosi and calling him a communist, like a left-wing, you know, he's too left for South Carolina. So that's what I'm looking at very carefully. But Harrison has run a beautiful race, so we'll see.
Need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to add another voice to this conversation, and we would also like to add yours, the listeners. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on this election night 2020. Coming up next on WHUR, John Mons and the Original Quiet Storm. This conversation continues in a few seconds. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue on the bumpy road to the White House as East Coast polls prepare to close. You like that, huh? Yeah, we... Yes, indeed. We are sharing the analysis and any breaking news as it happens. We continue this discussion with Mary Curtis, columnist for The Roll Call, and Jesse Holland, host of C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jesse, what's happening?
How you doing, man? This is an exciting night, right?
Let me tell you, some people would call it exciting. Some people would call it nerve-wracking. You know?
Man, I went to the store today and came home with Krispy Kreme, tequila, and triple sec. I'm ready.
Well, everybody's got their junk food and their brown liquor, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
Well, let us hope that we are all consuming the food and any adult beverage with care and responsibility tonight as we look at where things are. Okay, so... You know, right now, you know, Jesse, you know, one of the things, if you just look at what's, you know, what's happening in Washington, you have all of these people at Black Lives Matter Plaza. Surprisingly, unless I'm incorrect here, other than long lines, things went much more smoothly around the DMV during this, this general election than it did during, you know, some of the primaries. I mean, things were just ugly during that first vote during the primary.
Well, this is partly because of what we've seen over the last 3.5 years. we actually came prepared for this election. And keep in mind, a lot of people, including myself, were at the polls days ago. A lot of people early voted. So you don't have as many people out voting today as you had in the past. So the poll workers could actually handle the number of people who were there. So I saw a huge number of early voters. I voted at the Prince George's County Sports and Learning Complex myself, and I didn't have to stand in line for more than 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the first time ever since I've lived in this area it took that little time to vote. So I think that people were prepared and waiting for any hiccups in the system. And of course, you know, when you prepare for the worst, when it comes, it won't be. So us being prepared for all of the possible shenanigans made people have a pretty good and positive voting day, not only here in Washington, but I think for around the nation. We're not seeing many complaints about any voting shenanigans going on so far.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, other than, you know, the robocall that was
right.
telling people to stay home. And you know, I'm still amazed, and maybe I shouldn't be, that these things happen, but that people would think that they would be impactful, Mary. I mean, there's nothing that you can't even watch cartoons without seeing some kind of reference to the political season. I mean, even the kids are in tune. Everybody knows that November 3rd is the day. And yet, you know, robocalls and other kinds of voter suppression tactics are still abounding.
It's true. I mean, I've heard that, you know, you don't need Russia in 2020 to do what it did in 2016 because people are doing their jobs for themselves here in the United States with the robocalls, with people showing up armed to some of the polling places and intimidating voters. And we even had a case in Alamance County in North Carolina of people marching to the polls, stopping for a protest, and having the police pepper spray this group of people, which included children and older people, a woman in a wheelchair. And that was on the last day of early voting in North Carolina, which was Saturday. And today they, 1,000 strong, marched again. And so you do see these tactics, but in a sense, I believe they have backfired because, as the professor was saying earlier, when you try to take the vote away and when your tactics are so bold, people are going to say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to come. I'm going to stand in this line. I'm going to make my voice count. So I think it may have backfired.
You know, Jesse, we've heard for many, many years that high voter turnout favors the Democrats. However, I would argue it may have favored the Democrats in early voting, but do you think that it may have also emboldened the Republicans who said, oh, look, the Democrats are coming out. Let me get my hips on out there, whether it's early voting or day of or mail-in or what have you. Do you believe that old adage no longer holds as much water?
Well, we're going to learn a lot about the voting population through this election, because you have to keep in mind that there was a sea change in how Americans voted this time. I think the last number I heard was more around 86 million Americans voted early in this election. And that's the highest number ever. So that means that we don't know who was left to vote on Election Day. So does that mean that there's going to be a high Republican vote on Election Day? Does that mean there's going to be a high African-American vote on Election Day? We don't know that. This election will teach us that. But one of the things that we were able to estimate is that the early vote trended Democratic just by the sheer number of people voting. This is assuming that Democrats vote for Democrats and Republicans vote for Republicans. That just by the number of Democrats who voted early would lead us to believe that Democrats and Joe Biden led in an early vote. But that's not a guarantee. We have to wait to find out that information after the election when we go through all the people who actually voted. But if you just go under the assumption Democrats voted for Democrats, Republicans voted for Republicans, Biden should be leading in the early vote. Now it just depends on who's left and who showed up. Once again, elections are about turnout.
Yeah, and the unaffiliateds, too. More and more people, particularly young people, are registering unaffiliated or independent, and so they're going to be really crucial.
I want to ask you about something that happened to me today when I was out reporting. I was in Anne Arundel County, which is between Baltimore and D.C., northeast of D.C., a little more conservative, but also very, very diverse. A lot of people of color in Anne Arundel County. Along the water, you've got some high-end homes and some high-end people with high-end income. But I was in a working-class community in the middle of the day, and by one of the polling places, and one of the voters came out, and I asked if I could speak to her. I knew she was a woman of color, but I didn't know whether or not she was Black or Hispanic. She was Hispanic, and I asked her who she voted for, and she said Donald Trump, just when I thought nothing would ever shock me. And when I asked her whether or not she was concerned about some of the comments that he made in the beginning of his campaign, his first campaign, as well as some of the things that he has said since about, undocumented immigrants coming up from the South. And I said, does that bother her? And she said, of course. And then she said that the economy was more important to her, and her accent was really heavy, unfortunately. But she also said something to the effect of, "There are good things and bad things about presidents." Do I need to get on, a counselor's couch, Mary? Should I have been shocked at that?
Well, it's very interesting that Trump has done pretty well with Latinos voters. In some areas, of course, in Florida, you have the Cuban Americans that are very conservative, and they really go heavily Republican. But you would think, particularly with the children that they have separated from their parents, over 500 children, that some of these issues would make inroads. And it's also interesting because the economy has been in collapse since COVID, and Trump really has done pretty well in polls on the particular issue of the economy. People tend to think that Republicans do better on that. And he still touts his past as a business person, although his businesses really collapsed, many of them, and went into bankruptcy. So it's fascinating to me as well. We'll see how the numbers shake out. And I think the Latino voters in the Southwest, maybe their patterns are somewhat different in voting. But you can never tell. And they say that for Black and Latino men, that Trump is doing better than expected as well. I don't have the formula there.
I was about to ask, why is that? What are we missing here with, let's say Black men and Donald Trump? Are these the secret Donald Trump voters that we saw in 2016, the people who would never publicly admit to it, but secretly go in and vote for him? What's the deal with Black men and Donald Trump?
Well, let me just add this in here.
You're going to speak for every Black man on the planet right now.
I defer to the man.
Right,
okay,
yes.
So I will tell you that we've been having this conversation inside the secret halls of my fraternity for the last year. And
what fraternity is
that? This is Omega Psi Phi.
Well, that's the problem, but go ahead.
Okay. We're going to let that pass tonight.
I'll really step out of this one.
Yes.
I will tell you that the shy voters of 2016, they are no longer shy. they will tell you that they voted for Donald Trump. But when you hear them talk about economy, more and more what I found they really mean is taxes, especially the people of wealth and who are upper middle class. Mm-hmm. Even black men and black women, they see a Democratic administration as an administration that's going to raise their taxes. And that is their first and foremost concern. They don't want their taxes raised. So they will not vote for someone that they see and they think is going to take money out of their pocket. So in addition, for black men, there are some black men who are voting for Donald Trump because they don't like his words, but they like his attitude. The you can't touch me, I can do what I want, and I dare you to do something about it.
The Teflon attitude.
The Teflon attitude, exactly. They see that attitude, and they like it. They don't, and so, I mean, everyone has a reason why they vote for whoever they vote for. But when I talk to black men who said they're going to vote for Donald Trump, what I hear most is that they like his attitude and they don't want to pay more taxes, which they see Biden as someone who's going to raise their taxes.
Mm.
But the numbers still say that black men will vote overwhelmingly for Biden, just not at the numbers that black women will. I mean, I think it's
correct.
Like 80-some percent, 88, 87, whereas black women, it's, you know, mid-high 90s. So,
And the number, like you're saying, the number of black men who vote for Donald Trump will not turn this race. You won't. If Donald Trump wins, it won't be because of the few black men who voted for him. It will be, once again, the suburban women, not the suburban white women, but the suburban women, which also include women of color.
Yeah.
So if those suburban women don't break for Donald Trump the same way they did in 2016, this race is over.
Yeah, but it could
also
make...
seniors. Seniors, we've seen that they are turning away from him a little bit more than they did in 2016. And some of that is, of course, health related. He's talked about COVID and turning the corner, and many of these people have really been hit by it. And they're really frightened at his attitude of saying, well, you know, we're not going to pay attention to the science here. So you've seen that. That'll be some early numbers in Florida that you'll be able to see if that trend holds, because if some of those senior areas and we see him not with those numbers, then we'll know that he's in trouble.
And certainly will make for some very unpleasant conversation at the Thanksgiving table.
No. We won't have a Thanksgiving table because of COVID.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's right. Mm-hmm.
We're all on our own. They're making me cook for the first time this year.
Yeah. Yes.
On Zoom.
Yeah, on Zoom. The virtual table. Yes, indeed. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are taking a look at some of the issues that are coming through as a result of election 2020. This is the main event, and we are keeping an eye on the way things are happening right now. Indiana called for President Trump. Only USA Today calling Kentucky for President Trump. Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, literally right before my eyes, and D.C. now being called for Vice President Biden.
My home state. I'm a Baltimore girl, West Baltimore girl.
Oh, the West Side. Okay. I live in Northeast Baltimore. We'll have to talk later. Let's talk about some of the Senate races, Jesse. That, you know, I spoke to Ben Cardin today, a Maryland U.S. Senator, and he was, you know, kind of talking about you know, the possibilities of flipping the Senate, only needing really, the Democrats only need three to do so. Possible or political pipe dream. And by the way, Oklahoma just going for President Trump just now. But go ahead. Jesse?
Sorry, I had myself on mute while I was listening to you.
Okay, go right ahead.
I see the Democrats taking the Senate as a distinct possibility. One, the Georgia races. Georgia has two senators both up for election this year, and they are both running in what is now a purple state. So Georgia voters, the Democrats in Georgia, want to get that 50+1 so they don't have to have a runoff in either race. But even if they get to a runoff, Democrats will have a good shot of taking those races. In South Carolina, the race for Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham is awfully close. There should be no way a Democrat is even challenging a Republican in South Carolina, but Jamie Harrison is doing a good job in that state, and that one may go down to the wire.
Even and let's in face
Mississippi,
it, a black Democrat.
Right. Oh, no, no, yeah, exactly. Even in speaking of another black Democrat, even in Mississippi, Mike Espy is putting up a strong challenge. Is running the best race a black Democrat or thing in Mississippi a Democrat has run for Senate in years, and he is in the ballpark for upsetting Cindy Hyde in that state. So I think it's entirely possible that the Democrats flip the Senate by those three votes, four if Joe Biden loses, three if Joe Biden wins. I think it's entirely possible that we'll wake up tomorrow and find out we have a Democratic Senate and the Democrats held the House as well.
What about?
Well, they might need an extra two because Doug Jones in Alabama is not looking good because that's such a red state, although he's been a good senator, but the numbers, that's such a pro-Trump state. He's run a good race. You have in Colorado, Cory Gardner seems to be in some trouble. In Maine, Susan Collins.
I was about to ask about her.
Here in North Carolina, it looked like the Democrat, Cal Cunningham, had a good chance to beat Tom Tillis, the incumbent, Republican incumbent, but then Cal had a little bit of a sexting scandal, but it still is close, so who knows?
Well, I mean, if you can be president.
I know. That's what a lot of people I've talked to have said. They like his policies, and with the president, who's been credibly accused of so many things. So we'll have to see what happens. And some people I know about just didn't vote in that race.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about Susan Collins in Maine. She's been in the Senate, some would argue since Moses parted the Red Sea. And she has always been, she's a moderate Republican in just a uniquely political state. She has wielded so much political power and influence, and yet she has just kind of straddled the red and the blue fence time and time again. Can anybody talk to me about what happened with Susan Collins this time? Is it the support of President Trump and then kind of backing away from it publicly? How would you describe her situation?
Well, she's in a tough spot because she has been this independent figure, and people in Maine really, really like her. But she voted for Brett Kavanaugh, and some folks didn't agree with that. And she, this last time she didn't vote for Amy Coney Barrett, but they didn't need her vote. They let her kind of be independent. But she voted against impeachment. And people always make these memes about her. She always says she's concerned about Trump's transgressions. She's worried, and she felt that he would do better and learn his lesson. So the independent and middle-of-the-road people felt that they got mad at her. But then if she moves too far away from Trump, she needs the Republicans, the solid Republicans. So she's kind of in the middle there. She can't get too far away from Trump, then other folks who want her to be more independent don't like that. So she's really, she still might pull it out because she is well-liked, but Sarah Gideon has been running a strong campaign against her. The Republicans have put so much money in it, though, because they really want her to retain that seat.
Mm-hmm. Can somebody talk to me about Pennsylvania? I know if I were, in any other state around Pennsylvania, my feelings would be hurt because, I say that tongue in cheek, But, you know, we are talking about certainly the Electoral College. And it's almost like the United States of Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio, and Wisconsin, and Michigan, and nobody else matters. And but again, back to the whole Pennsylvania thing, you know, the president said, you know, we win Pennsylvania, we win the whole thing. That is not completely inaccurate, depending on what else happens.
Well, one of the things that we always look at when you talk about presidential races is the places which the candidate, where the candidates come from. Joe Biden, this is why you keep hearing Joe Biden say he's from Scranton.
Mm-hmm.
He might be a senator, former senator from Delaware, but this is why you keep hearing him repeating that he was from Scranton. So just like Al Gore back in 2000, if the candidate from that state can't win that state, it's going to make it hard for them to win the election. If Joe Biden can't win Pennsylvania, it's going to make it really hard for him to win the election. Now, let me just preface it by saying this as well. If Democrats can actually turn Georgia, if they can turn North Carolina, if they can turn Texas, then Pennsylvania won't matter. But in a normal election year, Joe Biden would have to win Pennsylvania, would have to win Florida. But I'm looking at the numbers coming in from Texas, from North Carolina, from Georgia. If Biden takes those states, then there's probably it probably won't matter what Pennsylvania has to say.
Yeah, Mary, what about Texas?
Texas? Well, I was just going to say, and Barack Obama actually won North Carolina in 2008,
mm-hmm.
Slim, but. So that's a possibility. And Texas is kind of interesting. Democrats have been salivating over that turning blue forever, and Beto O'Rourke came close in his race with Ted Cruz, but they've been voting solidly Republican. But they are really looking at the numbers coming from young people, Hispanics, also Asian Americans, which there's a growing population there, and they've been voting very strongly Democratic. And the early numbers, that's why you saw all the kerfluffle over counting those drive-in votes in Harris County, where Houston is, because that is a heavily Democratic area. So you can see Republicans trying to, you know, take away as many of those votes as they can. So, you know, I don't know if there's a shot there that Democrats have, but I know that they've put a lot of resources. You saw the candidates visit those states. And I think it all depends on the turnout, as both of you have been saying, particularly among young people. And they say, you know, young people don't vote. But this number for early voting, the young Generation Z and the millennials and so forth, they've been showing up.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I talk about my daughter on this program all the time, and she's 22. And she first voted at 17 because she made it under the wire where she would be eligible, to vote, in that 17 to 18 year, you know, when Maryland said you can vote at 17 if you're going to be 18 by election day. And, you know, she worried me to death about her mail-in ballot. And I think it's just wonderful that she did, and that kind of passion from someone who is certainly not as effervescent and as expressive as her father. and so as a result, you know, if I look at her and, you know, and her friends, and all of her friends are voting, all of them. I asked her, any of your friends not voting? No, Dad. She's 22. And so I certainly agree, Mary, that the young voice in this election and the black woman's voice are absolutely paramount.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a son, but he's in New York State, which, you know, it's not exactly a swing state, so.
Well, like, you know, you should have had him register you know, down there in North Carolina, because I'm sure you all saw that story about the medical student from Johns Hopkins who was registered to vote in Florida, and she flew to Florida to vote early instead of registering in Baltimore because she knew the importance of casting her vote in Florida because Florida is so pivotal. Okay, I'll start with you, Jesse. When are we going to know about the end of this heavyweight bout? Not tonight, okay. But is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be Friday? Do I have to cancel my weekend plans? What?
Okay, so I divided it up into three different questions. When will we know who won the presidential election?
Mm-hmm.
I think we will know tomorrow morning.
Okay.
When will one of the candidates concede? That's a whole different question. I don't think either candidate will concede before Thursday or Friday. But the really important question is, when will the lawsuits end?
Yeah.
The lawsuits are what going to actually end this election. So I think we still have a couple of weeks before all of the wrangling in the courts will be over. But I do think we'll know who had the most votes by tomorrow morning. I think we won't see Trump or Biden concede until Thursday or Friday after they start searching the country for more votes.
Yeah.
And then you'll have another week or so before the election lawsuits all end.
What do you think, Mary? You have 30 seconds. When are we going to know?
I agree a lot with that. I'm not sure that Trump will concede. And they'll have to drag him out of there. But you will see lawsuits. But I think we will know, particularly if the margins are huge. If the margins are big, and if Florida and North Carolina come in and we'll know early, and it's Biden because Trump really needs those, then I think it will be an early evening in some ways. So that sort of. And by the way, I just wanted to. I always use my middle initial because that's what my grandmama name was, Mary C. Curtis.
There we go, Mary C. Curtis. Right now, 44 electoral votes for Vice President Biden, 18. For Donald Trump, and we will continue to watch this throughout the evening. Mary C. Curtis.
Thank you.
Jesse Holland. Thank you
so
much. Also, Dr. Michael Fauntroy. We want to thank him for participating in the conversation. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Tuesday, Election Day 2020, November 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.